Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast. My name's Amanda Rocchio, previously Amanda Meixner. I am best known for my meal prep and nutrition content. And today I'm here with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and my husband, Chris Rocchio.
What's happening?
Today we're chatting all about macros. But before we get into today's episode, Chris is going to read a five-star review from one of our listeners.
Yeah, this is titled Science Backed and Informative by V. Durazzo. Absolutely love these episodes. Love the in-depth views given on multiple fitness-related topics as well as dual-sided opinions. The best for people trying to understand how to live a healthier lifestyle.
Thank you so much for that review. And like we say every time, if you guys take a moment, leave us a review, it would mean so much to Chris and I.
Yeah, and if you want to even throw out some stuff that you want to hear, like, you know, obviously give the good reviews, give the feedback, whatever you want to do. But if you want to just put in a little thing and say, hey, can you guys do a topic on this? That might be the best way to reach out to us about certain podcast episode ideas, because sometimes those topics can get buried into the DMs.
Absolutely. No, that's a fantastic idea. And we're always, you know, want to cover subjects that you guys want to hear. This is all about you. It's not just about Chris and I. Really trying to make an impact in your life and help make your day a little bit easier. So today we're talking all about macros, and macros are the macronutrients that make up our food, which are carbs, protein, and fat. So you might have heard of macronutrients and micronutrients. Today we're talking about macronutrients. So most foods usually have at least two of the macronutrients. So they might be like avocados, for example, are predominantly fat, but they also contain carbs, mostly from its large amount of fiber. So yeah, you usually see, like, you'll even see on my Instagram page, sometimes I'll use like a piece of chicken to represent protein, but usually it'll have one of the other macronutrients. It's just probably has the most of that particular macronutrient, like sweet potato is predominantly carbs. I don't know if there are there any other macros in sweet potato?
Yeah, there's like 2 grams in a cup or something like that.
Oh, 2 grams protein?
Yeah.
See, like it'll surprise you, but that's why it's helpful to actually like obviously track them. You know, use MyFitnessPal. You really start to understand like where all your macros are coming from. So tracking macros for a short period of time, in addition to calories, can help you hit your goals, but also lead to a more balanced diet and probably even better body composition change, right? So we always say, start with calories, like that's the most important, but there's a lot of benefit from adding macronutrients on top of that. So we'll get into that a little bit more. Now, remember, for fat loss, you do need a calorie deficit, and for muscle gain, you do need a calorie surplus, and for maintenance, you need calorie maintenance, as it would sound. But catering your macros towards your specific goal can help you reach your goals faster and like feel better overall.
Yeah, this kind of comes from the whole debate on whether that all calories are created equal side of the argument versus the like sources of calories are not created equal, right? And a lot of people kind of, I think there's a lot of straw manning or misrepresenting of arguments in this. So obviously in terms of energy, in terms of the amount of energy it provides your body, one calorie does equal one calorie. But, you know, the source of that energy and what additional nutrients it provides, whether that's in micronutrients, macronutrient count, things like that, that's going to be different, and that's going to determine, you know, a lot better outcomes in certain situations, such as a high protein diet versus a low protein diet.
Right, totally. And, you know, so I think there's also that whole if it fits your macros diet, which, you know, kind of has a lot of benefits, which if you're tracking macros, you're kind of doing that. But it's not an excuse to just like eat whatever junk food or whatever, you know, like you should still be getting a majority of your diet from whole foods. But the nice thing, if you're tracking macros and you like actually track some of the fun foods in there, you might have an easier time hitting your goal while, you know, incorporating fun foods, whether that's weekly basis, maybe it's even daily basis. So that is some of the benefit of tracking macros.
Yeah, because I mean, when you're in a caloric deficit, you are going to lose weight. You know, that's been shown, but there's also the idea about where do you want that weight to come from? So, you know, there's studies that show that if you have a higher protein diet in a caloric deficit, like one of the studies we'll have in the show notes and we'll go over later, they recommend a high protein diet because it's going to help preserve muscle mass. And we'll talk about all of this stuff later as well, but I just wanted to kind of lay out this argument versus like kind of explaining that, yes, one calorie does equal one calorie, whether you're getting it from a piece of chicken or from a donut, in terms of your body's energy levels are concerned. But in terms of what's happening metabolically on the cellular level and the chemical reactions, all that kind of stuff, That's going to be different. And so therefore body composition outcomes could be different, even though caloric intake would be the same.
Right. And, you know, maybe this method is not for everyone, but, you know, Chris and I have seen a lot of success with it. Chris has used it on a lot of his clients. For me personally, I found when I was tracking my macros, I realized I was a little bit under my optimal protein level, and I could actually benefit more from eating a little bit more carbs and a little less fat. So it was kind of cool to see that, to see the numbers. And I just track for a short period of time, you know, like a month, or, you know, you can do it for a couple months and then you stop because you get used to it, or you don't want to become too obsessive. Of course, that's not the goal with this at all.
Yeah, you can really determine your level of detail whenever you start doing it. I mean, personally, when I first started tracking, I started tracking with protein, and it actually showed me that I actually wasn't eating enough protein. And so that was a good thing to start tracking. And then once I started realizing that, because when you first started working out, even if you're not tracking, if all of the things stay the same, you start noticing some differences. And so your first couple months, like, you, even if you don't track, you are going to feel a little bit, you know, bigger in terms of the muscular level, and you start feeling a little bit leaner and a little bit tighter. But then once you get into it and those gains start to taper off and plateau, then that's when I started like getting more and more detailed on things. Right. And so, you can determine, how detailed you want to go, how crazy you want to implement these changes. If you want to change everything altogether and be like, okay, I'm going to track everything. I'm going to get my journal. I'm going to get it down. I'm even going to track how I feel at the end of the day so I can tie which workout or which diet is best for me, all these things. Or you can just start doing a little bit like I did. You know, we give a lot of general information in this, but there is still a ton of nuance with this. Even with the studies, like, you have to talk about the nuance, because these people will cite the studies like crazy. You know, it's like, oh, they cite, you know, you should use 1.1 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. And this other study says another one. But then you look into it, and like most of the people in the study, they weren't doing resistance training, and then only a small portion of them are training, right? And then you look at another study and everybody's an athlete. So it's kind of different. And so that's why you really have to dig into the details about the nuance between what's going to work for this group of people and what's going to work for you.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And that will bring us to our first macronutrient, which is protein. So when it comes to protein, we recommend this as the first macronutrient that you should track. So if you're tracking, you know, calories, you know, and protein, we'd say that's a pretty good place to start if you don't want to start tracking carbs and fat yet. Mm-hmm. So here are a few reasons why it's one of the more important macronutrients to track. So studies show that protein is by far like one of the most, is the most filling macronutrient. It helps you feel more full with less food. So, you know, often people refer to that as protein being very satiating, like much more satiating than carbs, even more satiating than fat. So that's a good reason to add protein to most of your meals. And what they showed in another study is that increasing protein intake from 15% to 30% of calories made overweight women eat 441 fewer calories each day without intentionally restricting anything. So it's a really nice diet hack.
Absolutely.
Protein is also the building blocks of muscle. So if your goal is to increase strength and to build more muscle, protein intake will be important. Now, additionally, studies show keeping your protein intake high during weight loss can help reduce the amount of muscle lost. So, moral of the story, in both, you know, in opposite ends of the spectrum, keeping protein a little higher was beneficial, which Chris later on will get to specific recommendations.
Right. And, you know, just to add to that, it's obviously, and it takes a lot more of like a resting body metabolism, like a resting energy expenditure, to maintain your muscle mass as opposed to maintaining fat mass. So just by adding more muscle to your frame, you're increasing your metabolism.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to cover the basis on protein, it's like, so every gram of protein that you take will equal 4 calories. And it's the same thing with carbs. So every gram of carbs is 4 calories. But with fat, you're actually going to be, it's going to be 9 calories for every gram of fat. So that's why we think it's really important to track macros, especially when you're trying to like optimize your protein intake. Because if you're just tracking calories and you're eating a lot of peanut butter, nuts, things like that, those fat grams can stack very quickly. And I only say that because I can easily sit down and eat 1,000 grams worth of pistachios in one sitting, you know, especially if I get them in a bag of like when they're already shelled. Like,
which is very convenient, but also dangerous. It's convenient,
yeah. Like, I actually, the whole shelling aspect of it kind of slows the thing down and gets your brain a chance to catch up. So I like that. But yeah, it's very easy for me to do that. So yeah, just keep in mind that it's 4 calories for a gram of protein, 4 calories for a gram of carbs, and 9 calories for a gram of fat. And if you're tracking alcohol, because if you're a drinker, then you may want to know this as well. That's 7 calories per gram. So you have to factor that into your caloric intake. You can't just, those aren't free.
Wine isn't a free calorie, babe.
Yeah, well, we all wish.
Well, so that actually brings us to the next macronutrient on our list, which is carbohydrates, which is probably, is that your favorite macronutrient, babe?
No, protein.
Really?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Well, it's your second favorite.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, they're very close, but yes, definitely protein.
So carbohydrates are usually sugar, starches, and fiber. And so what will happen is most are broken down into glucose, aka blood sugar, and then they're stored as glycogen in the liver and muscles. So that's why this is very important for performance, whether you're building muscle, or they're also great for post-workout to reduce cortisol. Chris always tells us to get our carbs in post-workout. It's something I learned from him. Super helpful tip. And yeah, I usually eat carbs post-workout. Now remember, vegetables have carbs too. So I feel like there's always that confusion, like, cause people go, I'm going on a no carb diet. Like there's really no such thing unless you're literally doing carnivore, which is most people are not doing carnivore.
Well, if someone's telling you that they're on a no carb diet, you can just pretty much tell them, you believe that they're not telling the truth at that point, right? Like they've actually not doing a no carb diet and they're not even trying because it's impossible, right?
Yeah, because I mean you need the vegetables, so like obviously
unless you're carnivore, right? Sorry, you did say that.
No, you're good. So you do need the vegetables. Low carb, so there's low carb, and on the very low end is keto. So you'll know people in keto eat like low carb fruit or like low sugar fruit, and less starchy vegetables. So that's on the extreme end, actually.
Yeah, but that deserves its own podcast because we don't want to get into the weeds with that.
Yeah. That's.
But I will bring to your attention, if you haven't heard it already, is carb cycling. So with carb cycling, what you would do is you would ramp up your carbs on training days. So carbs and calories, if you wanted to. Or you can do it one of two ways. You can either adjust your macro ratio so you have more fat, less carbs, protein stays the same on rest days. And then on training days, you have less fat and more carbs, protein stays the same. Or you could do it with fluctuations in calories. So you just add the additional carbs on your training day and then decrease it. Kind of depends on your goal and the specifics. And I don't want to give you every example for every different variability in that situation. But just so you know, you can kind of play with that and look into different options about playing with macro ratios, carb cycling, calorie cycling, and your options with that.
Also, I do see a common question that comes up is net carbs. Like, what are net carbs? So that usually mostly only applies to keto. Like, Chris and I don't keep track of net carbs, and you know, we don't have our clients keep track of net carbs unless you were doing keto. But what net carbs means is usually whatever the total carbohydrates are on the list, minus the fiber, because they don't count the fiber when they're tracking it because of how, you know, it affects you hormonally and all that. And that factors into keto. But yeah, you shouldn't really worry about that. I mean, if you want to look at your total fiber, because it's good getting a bit more fiber in your day, you know, it's not a bad thing to look at. But that'll also come into play if you're eating more whole foods and lots of fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and even Dr. Mary Pardee was talking about getting like 35 grams of fiber a day or something like that. But
oh, I have no idea. Do you remember what her figure?
But you know, to add some nuance to that, there's also a law of diminishing returns with that, because if you have too much fiber, you can actually affect some like nutrient absorption ability of your digestive tract. And so there is a level at which too much fiber is not a good thing. But obviously you want to optimize to build that good gut bacteria and all that kind of stuff.
Right, totally. And, you know, like, again, like we said, a majority of that from whole foods. There's so many foods that add fiber now, which, I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, even my protein pancake mix.
But, I mean, you know, like, if you're getting a lot of fiber from added food, you know, I'd like to see some of that come from whole foods.
Mm-hmm.
So the last macronutrient on the list is, of course, fats. And like Chris mentioned earlier about the 9 calories per gram. You know, you should just use that to help you watch your portion. Don't let that deter you from consuming fat. It's a super important macronutrient. Mm-hmm. Your body needs it for energy and critical functions such as hormone production, nutrient absorption, and body temperature maintenance. This fun fact that I like to tout is that brain matter is comprised of about 60% fat when drained of water. So monounsaturated fats like olive oil, avocados, almonds, and eggs can also increase production of acetylcholine, a neurotransmitter that plays an important role in learning and memory. So, I mean, that's why they often refer to fats as like brain fuel.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for your head.
Yeah, it's also a good neurotransmitter for training too.
Chris is all about optimizing training, if you can't tell already. Not having enough fat in your diet can manifest in symptoms like extreme mental fatigue, dry skin, excessive hunger, loss of menstrual cycle, and more. So you really don't want to skimp on fats. You know, watching your portions is great and all, but you do not want to go too low fat either.
Yeah, I mean, it's generally recognized like you can go as low as 20%. Let's say if you were on a high protein, high carb diet, if you're trying to gain muscle, you can go as low as like 20%. Or, you know, typically most people recommend between 20 and 30. But I've also heard some coaches recommend as high as 40 if you're in the obese range and, you know, you want to work on insulin sensitivity and things like that and keep the carbs low, but you don't want to go quite keto. You want to keep the protein high, things like that. So, you know, just kind of as a typical range between 20 and 30 and higher as much as 40. That is in case, you know, you have a little bit extra body fat.
Right, right. Yeah, this is more like what applies to most people. If you happen to be on a diet that's treating a certain disease or that's really working well for you, like, awesome. Like, keep that up. This is more like what will help the majority of people.
Right. But now we're going to get into the details of how to actually calculate your macros, calculate your calories, because that's the whole thing. It's like we're sitting here talking about what levels we're trying to hit and where they should be. But first and foremost, you need to know how many calories you need to eat in a day, right? And a lot of people are kind of lost as to where they should be. And you know, first and foremost, you do have online calculators that you can use. So there's free calculators and they, you know, will take your body weight, your height, your weight, your sex, your age, all these things. They put them into equation and they add an activity factor and out comes all these factors. They'll give you calories, they'll give you macros depending on your goals. That's great, but I'm going to actually show you a little bit of the methodology about where this comes from, and a lot of these calculators are based on different underlying assumptions, and so you can get different results depending on which one you use. But I was kind of just going to cut through all the BS and show you that like kind of a base formula to use. There could be some adjustments to make afterwards. We'll go over that, but you need to know a general idea of what your BMR is, your basal metabolic rate, or your resting energy expenditure. And this is the amount of energy your body takes up or uses when you do absolutely nothing. It's just normal metabolic functions, maintaining your body weight, all that kind of stuff. And then on top of that, you have to add what's called the non-resting energy expenditure. And obviously that's just your movement throughout the day. So that's your activity factor that we'll get into later. And then if you add these two together, it's what you get as your TDEE, which is your total daily energy expenditure. All right. And that is where your maintenance is at, including with your activity of the day. And then from there, you would either add or subtract 15, 20%, whatever it is, depending on your goal, whether or not you want to gain muscle, burn fat, all that kind of stuff. So you have essentially, if you want to really get into the nitty gritty, and do your own calculations, there is a general equation that's used in the industry. There's one of two. There's the Catch-McArdle equation or the Mifflin-St. George. And the Catch-McArdle is used for, like, if you have your lean body mass measurement. So you know what your body fat percentage is, and you can factor that into the equation. And then the Mifflin-St. George is when you don't have that, but you have all the other ones I stated before. So your sex, height, weight, age.
Yeah. And if you want to get your body fat percentage, you know, I don't know how accurate these are, but there are scales now that factor a couple different things and you have to get on the scale with your bare feet.
They're not accurate. I mean, they can give you I guess there's probably a standard deviation of like 5%. I couldn't even tell you depending on
that's
the thing,
crazy.
But
yeah,
if they're giving you, because even the ones that you stand on and then they have the hand nodes, like the thumb nodes,
yeah,
that you hold up. I forgot what those are called, like whatever. I forgot the brand name. But then there's also the DEXA scan. That's really good. There's also other people that really swear by the caliper tests.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, depending on where you're at, I mean, it could be could be difficult for you to go out and pay for a DEXA scan. You know, and you can do something as much as looking up the whole, there's like those breakdowns on online where it's like, here's this, this is what 8% looks like, 10%, 15, yeah. 20, and it goes all the way up to like, you know, 40, like obese essentially.
Yeah, but I mean, you could also look up like the most accurate ways to measure body fat besides a DEXA scan and see like what could get you close to.
Yeah, but the bottom line is like, if you don't have one of those things, then you're probably better off not even guessing unless yeah. you're using one of those visual charts.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, there's a lot of times, like for instance, there's a bodybuilder friend of mine that's like ripped to the max, but then he did his reading. It was a DEXA scan and he was 12%. And he was just finding out he carries a lot of fat in his upper thighs.
Oh.
Right. So he's wow. like, he's ripped. His lower back doesn't carry fat like most guys. Because most guys, when they have fat, that's like the first place that that deposits at, especially if you're kind of fit and you're athletic, but you're gaining a little bit in body fat percentage, it'll accumulate on your lower back. But, you know, for him, it was all in his upper thighs. And so if you don't know, I would say use the Mifflin St. Jour.
Perfect. No, I see what you're saying. I can't wait till there's a more accurate way to tell it at home, because I do feel like it's a helpful measurement overall.
It's great. I mean, especially with this Cash-McArdle equation, or when we talk about later when we're talking about protein intake, because some equations use total body weight and then other ones use lean body mass. And I think actually, if you know your lean body mass, that's a much better figure to go off of. Like say, for instance, there's the equation of some people say 1 gram per pound of body weight. Right. And that might work if you're lean and you're, you know, less than 20% as a guy. But if you're obese, say you're 300 pounds and you don't have that much muscle in your body, so you know a lot of that is fat, well, you don't need 300 grams of protein a day. So we'll get into that. But so that's why I think the lean body mass is good to know, even if you just get it done just once to let you know where you're at. And then from there, you can kind of use the guesswork. Or you can kind of say you get one of those floor scales for your bathroom and then see what the reading is right there. Same day you go to the DEXA scan, see what the deviation is between the two. And that's what you know that the variation could be between, right? I mean, it's a rough estimate, but it could be a cheaper way than you continue to go get DEXA scans every few months or whatever. Anyway, sorry, I was a little bit of a sidetrack, but I think, I don't know. I think this shit's important.
Oh, no, it is. It's interesting to think about all the factors and how to calculate it. So
yeah, because that's our whole model. It's like we don't say the one size fits all. So if we sit here and give you this one model straight through and tell you it's going to be working for everybody, then, you know, we're just going to be lying to you. So that's not what we want to do. We'd rather give you more information and you can split this podcast up into two listenings because we get into too much detail. That's fine. But I'd rather not shortchange you this stuff. So anyway, you'll use one of those equations and then multiply the result by the activity factor. And that'll range anywhere between 1.2 and 1.9. And 1.2 will be the sedentary range. So that's if you have a desk job and you don't really move around, you don't work out during the day. And then all the way up to 1.9, that'll be if you, you know, work out 2 times a day, or say you have a very active job that's on your feet and you work out in the day. So that'll be a 1.9. And then, so after you multiply that activity factor, that's what will give you your TDEE.
See, and like, just be careful, because obviously you can fall into that trap. That's why people fall into the trap. Like, let me just exercise more, so my like TDEE is much higher. And like, while some of that is good, you know, we remind you about all the issues of over-exercising, you know, it can make you super hungry. It's not good for your overall health. So it's good to add in more activity, but definitely don't overdo it. You don't need to overdo it. And that's why we also recommend paying attention to calories, because still really hard to out-train a bad diet.
It really is. Absolutely. So like we said, that TDEE, that's what gives you your maintenance calories. And from there, you either add or subtract depending on your goal. And keep in mind, this is a great starting point. So you may have to do further adjustments. And this is why, you know, there's a little bit more detail to tracking. So if you have a little bit slower metabolism from have a long history of dieting, right? Say years and years of dieting. And we talked about this in our last episode. You can have metabolic adaptations to that lower diet that actually can slow down your metabolism. So say if that's happened and you do this equation and it's still not working for you, you may have to adjust down even further. And in that case, some people will even start using their goal body weight as the factor of where they want to be. It's not like if you wanted to lose 100 pounds, I wouldn't do it as 100 pounds. You do it in increments of like 30, right? But you can use your goal body weight in that aspect. So I'm not saying to do that right off the bat. I'm just saying that if you are in that situation and you are a little bit on the heavier side, then sometimes you can get a higher read in this situation. And sometimes you can get a lower read depending on if you have very fast metabolism. If you have a problem putting on muscle and you're lean to the max no matter what you eat and you get this equation, you're like, I'm already eating 3,000 calories. What the hell? And I'm not gaining anything. Then you may need to adjust up. So that's why tracking where this is taking you, what your progress is, at least on a weekly basis. I wouldn't do it daily because that's just too tedious. You're not going to see realized changes day by day because it's going to fluctuate depending on, you know, your water weight, the amount of salt you had the day before, all that kind of stuff.
So that's why it's like a good idea to also use the weekly average rule for your scale. So if you do want to weigh yourself every day, you know, look at your weekly average and your overall trajectory and do not let one day like set you off by any means. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, women around our menstrual cycle, we tend to fluctuate, you know, a few more pounds. Mm-hmm. So just take that into consideration.
Yeah. And weigh yourself the same time every day. That's an important thing. But next we're going to get into macros and this is where it gets even more tricky. So buckle up.
Get out your pen and paper or, you know, start writing on your notes and your iPhone. It's always a good idea or whatever phone you have.
Yeah. If you do want to follow along with this, I do a little bit of math to show you how I take your calorie intake and then work out your macros from there. Okay. If you don't want to just trust the online calculator, you want to go by where the research is at, you want to do your own fluctuations, whatever. So dealing with your macro ratio is going to depend on your goal, like I said before. But I always, no matter what the goal is, I always start with protein first. I mean, like we said, it's going to build and preserve muscle. It's very satiating. And like the research shows, there's numerous benefits of a high protein diet. And with protein intake, there's a kind of a sliding model for protein intake. And you're going to get different recommendations depending on the coach. You know, some people will say like just going for 1 gram per pound of body weight. That's usually the basis that you'll hear a lot, right? And a lot of people say that's too high. We're going to get into a little bit of that. You have other people that'll be a little bit more specific and say and give this sliding model approach depending on your body fat percentage, which I really like, okay? Because this kind of depends on certain metabolic processes that go on depending on what your body fat percentage is. So for instance, if you have a higher body fat percentage, you should be closer to like 1.2 grams per pound of lean body mass, okay? And so I was talking about like why lean body mass is important, knowing the body fat percentage. And so basically lean body mass is essentially taking your percentage of body fat and then multiplying that by your total body weight. And that gives you your fat mass and you subtract that from your body weight. And that's what gives you your lean body mass, right? So like I said, if you have a higher body fat, you should be closer to 1 gram per pound of lean body mass. And if you are lean with lower body fat, you should be closer to about 1.6 grams of lean body mass. Yeah, and some people get confused by this number and say it's too high if they're following the research because there are a bunch of studies that conflict in this. And then people are like, oh, I saw a study like this. And hey, I'm all about people that want to stay with the studies and be strict and don't want all this bro science coming out. But I mean, it's crazy because some of these studies, like you have one from 2008 recommending 0.7 to 1.1 grams. And that's, yeah, I'll just keep it at pounds so I won't confuse anybody. So 0.7 to 1.1 grams per pound of body weight. And another one that recommends 0.7 per pound of body weight. And another one that recommends 1 to 1.4 grams per lean body mass. So without going to each and every one of these, there's a ton of nuance in these studies. The results were dependent on the fitness of the participants, their caloric intake. Some of these studies use untrained subjects and others use elite athletes. And the study with the lowest protein intake recommendations actually did not have subjects in a caloric deficit. And it's really important to take that into consideration because it's important to have a higher protein diet while in a caloric deficit because you want to preserve muscle mass and to make sure that you actually lose that weight in body fat and not muscle, right? Because you're going to lose the weight, like we said, but it may not always be in fat. So that's why you get these fluctuations because, you know, that study that had the highest recommendation was in elite athletes and they were in a caloric deficit because that's what they were training, how to preserve their performance and function while getting them in shape for their event. And in that study with elite athletes, the one that recommend 0.7 to 1.1 grams per pound of body weight shows that the leaner you are and the more training experience you have, the more you can benefit from a higher protein diet. And that's where most people get the figure of 1 gram per pound of body weight. Because most people, let's face it, like most people in this industry that are following this stuff and tracking are trying to lose weight.
Right.
Right. Because that's just the majority. You know, there are very few people that have a problem putting on weight and putting on muscle. Mm-hmm. So even if 1 gram per pound of body weight overestimates by a little, and if you have a little bit higher body fat percentage, it's still a good number to shoot for with no adverse effects. And real quick, I just want to break down a couple myths of high protein diets because you get it a lot. I know I've gotten a lot on Instagram.
Amanda? No, definitely. Okay.
So people will throw out that it's bad for your kidneys or bad for your bones. These are a myth for both of them. And the truth is a high protein diet can worsen kidney function only for people that already have kidney disease. So it does not affect kidney function in healthy adults. And we have a study in the show notes to prove that. And it's the same thing with bones. We have a meta-analysis concluding that actually a high protein diet is favorable and not detrimental to bone health. So I know I'm getting into the weeds, but I just want to give you the breakdown of where these numbers come from. I wanted to you know, kind of dispel those myths so you can dispense of them as we see fit. And just to make it easy for your breakdown, let's just say 1 gram per pound of body weight, and that's where you start, you know, unless, like I said, the exception for obese participants.
So let's just say you're 150 pounds and you want to lose fat and you calculated your calories to be at around 1800 calories. Then you'd want to shoot for about 150 grams of protein.
Yeah, simple enough. And then from there, then this is where we get into the rest of your macronutrients from here. Okay, and taking calories into account. So we'd already talked about protein being 4 calories per gram of protein. So what you do with this 150 grams, if you're 150 pounds, is that you'll multiply that by 4, giving you 600 calories for protein in the day, right? And from here, you'll determine the ratio of carbs and fat in your diet. And some people start by limiting their carbs, and other people go by a percentage of body fat in their diet. And that's going to go by your goal. And we don't want to get into the weeds, the nuance there. But that's just going to be largely dependent on where you're at right now and where you want to be. But let's just say you want fat to be, we'll start with fat first. So let's just say you want fat to be 30% of your diet. In this case, that would be 540 calories of your 1800 calorie diet. And since that fat is 9 calories per gram, you'll divide 540 by 9, which is 60 grams of fat per day. So in this situation, again, 100 grams of protein, 60 grams of fat. So from here, now we have to determine where our carbs are at. So we would take 540 calories from fat plus the 600 calories from protein, and that leaves a total of 1100 calories. So from there, you're going to subtract that from your total calories to get the remaining calories of the day, and that's going to be what you're going to allot for carbs. And so in this situation, you would subtract 1800 minus 1140, and that will leave you with 660 calories. Further divide that by 4 because it's 4 calories per gram of carb, and that will leave you 165. So 660 divided by 4 is 165. And that is your allotted carbs for the day. So that would give you your macro breakdown. So you have 1,800 calories in a day. Macros are 150 grams of protein, 60 grams of fat, and 165 grams of carbs.
And that's you usually want to get close to that goal. I say when I track, it's not like I always hit all three of those like on the dot by any means, but, you know, pretty close to that goal. Or, you know, if you're a little off, if you're tracking calories too, then you can make sure you're hitting your calories and then close to your macronutrients. It's not like, don't worry if you're a couple grams off or whatever, no stress at all.
Yeah. Just adjust with your intake the next day, you know, because it's a long average. So bottom line is as long as you make it up, just so you know, like this is not a daily, obviously it's a day-to-day battle, right? But you're working on long-term deficits, long-term stacks of macros and calories. So just make sure that you're comparing what you're getting for the entire week, not just for the day. So just make sure that if you fall off, you can get right back on. Just make sure it averages out properly.
Yeah, for me, I just always make sure I'm hitting my calories, and then I try to get close to my macros, but I really don't stress if it's like roughly off. Mm-hmm. That much.
And yeah, like we said in the last podcast, usually when you start doing this and you get so detailed with it at the start, it becomes second nature and you don't have to portion control as much, or you don't have to weigh things out because you just know what it looks like. You can eyeball it. And it's just, like I said, it's second nature. And I know I keep stressing this and I'm going to keep saying it, but all of this will depend on your goal and your body composition right now. And if you're really overweight, you might want to go with the higher fat, lower carb model to work on insulin sensitivity. Some recommend keto or getting at least 40% of calories, like I was saying before, from fat if you're in that situation. If you're a leaner and you train more, you might want to go with the higher carb ratio to fuel your workouts, keep your muscles stocked with glycogen, all that kind of stuff. So you're really going to have to reach out and kind of get some idea based on your personal situation.
Right. And we definitely recommend trying low carb before going keto, because keto is like very extreme. Like, I think a lot of people could benefit just from going low carb. It's a lot easier. It's a lot more sustainable. You don't have to be like keto. You really have to watch your vegetables and your fruit consumption.
And protein intake too.
And protein intake can't be that high on keto. So I really recommend trying out low carb before, you know, exploring keto.
Mm-hmm. And look, if you can maintain or reach your goals with intuitive eating, by all means, go for it. We're not pressing this on anybody. We don't want to create any type of compulsive behavior based around tracking food or whatever. But if you have a goal and you don't have a plan for it, this is a starting point right here. You know, a lot of people are struggling with their goals and have been doing the yo-yo diets in and out, and a lot of things don't work for them. And so people get discouraged. People get kind of lost in the wind between like all the different options, right? I mean, everybody's telling you that this specific fad is the way to go. That's why we're all about the individualized model and personalization of this, because you really have to test things out and track it and see what works for you and what doesn't work for you, because a lot of these cookie cutter models just don't work.
Absolutely. And remember though, you do need to stick to something for a while to see, you know, to see your progress and to see how it goes. So if you're going with macros, you know, stick to it for like 6 weeks or whatever to see where you're at and all of that. I mean, obviously make adjustments as you go. I'm sure you'll be able to pick up on little things. But yeah, it's worked well for Chris and I. It's really, you know, opened our eyes to maybe where our shortcomings were in our diet. And, you know, I just really am a better place ever since using macros, you know, probably like a year or two ago. I'm not sure when I started, but I'll go through periods where I track closely for a little bit. And then I'll go through periods where after that, I'm a little more intuitive.
Yeah, we realize it might not be for everyone. If you're just starting out, you might just want to track calories and just start with that. But we do strongly urge you that you should at least shoot for a specific protein level. And one of the best takeaways from this that you'll just kind of embed into your daily habits is the idea of portion control, and how portion control in general is second nature. I mean, that's one of my greatest benefits from when I started tracking, is just realizing in terms of eyeball what the portions are and knowing how far that can actually take you in this journey.
Right. And some people like to try to say that you should just intuitively know your portions. But, you know, if you've been so disconnected from them for such a long time and, you know, you weren't in a place where listening to your body was good, whether that's, you know, even from childhood, like you have to eat your whole plate and you have to eat all of this and eat this dessert to make Sally feel good about her birthday. Mm-hmm. You know, it can really help you get back in touch with that. So yeah, obviously the end goal is that you're more in touch with, you know, what you need to feel good.
Absolutely.
So thank you for tuning into today's episode. We hope you got so much value. Like Chris said at the beginning of the episode, if you leave a review and let us know what other, you know, topics you'd like to hear, we'll really try to incorporate those. And yeah, we like chatting with you guys every week, and we'll catch you on the next one.
See ya.
Bye.